Philosophers in
space, 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 space.
I don't pretend to understand Brannigan's Law. I merely enforce it.
Listen, I'm not the nicest guy in the universe, because I'm the smartest, and being nice is something stupid people do to hedge their bets.
So, do you know what I'm gonna do before I do it?
Yes.
What if I do something different?
Then I don't know that.
Cool, cool.
I wish I read that book by that wheelchair guy.
Hello and welcome to episode 49 of Philosophers in Space. I'm Thomas C-130, and that's Thomas C-130B, or what is the number? I can't, something like that. Anyway, how's it going, Thomas C-130B?
It's going pretty good. I'm very proud of you that you've chosen to spend your choose-your-own-adventure card on this particular thing. I got to do my incredibly lengthy Dune trilogy, and now you get to do your Dune opus version. I'm very proud.
I didn't need to do some meta explanation of an explanation of the origin stories of Philosophers in Space origins.
Yep.
Because like this, where to even begin? This went through 17 iterations of what we wanted to do, and so like I remember origin story A. This, the essay that I originally was like, hey, we should talk about this, was something that I remembered someone telling, it was the weirdest thing. I remembered someone telling me about this on the phone when I was in college. And they're like, here's this, I'm reading this thing for a class. Mm-hmm. And it has this line, the obvious truth that art never improves. And that's all I remembered. And I remembered a couple other things from it. And even though I never read the essay, like I think they read parts of it to me or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because it was interesting to think about and talk about. It always was something I've thought about forever. I'm just like, does art improve? I've always been very taken by that question. Like, does it improve? Or like, is there a sense in which it can over time? Or is art, depending on how you define it, I guess, does it fill a role for us that is kind of, it can't improve by definition? So I've thought about that for years, and then, you know, it's been whatever, 10 years, 12 years, and I thought about it the other day, and I was like, I should track that down. Googling it was pretty easy to find nowadays. You just Google the couple words I could remember from it. Turns out it's a T.S. Eliot essay. And so we're going to do that. And then we're like, well, how do we do that, and what would we do it with? And so then eventually we got to the brilliant idea of combining it with Rick Lantis, because that's just our favorite thing.
Yeah, we were originally going to like do a comparison between an original or and a reboot or something.
Oh, yeah,
right?
That's actually true. Yeah, I wanted to do it with the reboot of, you know, the Schwarzenegger one. What is that?
Oh, Total Recall?
Total Recall.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking about it in those terms,
mm-hmm,
because it was like, does art improve? Well, look at this remake, and you can... And this would be controversial, but the remake, to me, if you showed a person who hadn't seen either, each of those, the second one is definitely better. Like, the remake is, in my opinion, 1,000% better. It's just a, well, better made thing. Like, things are better now. And I was going to talk about, and I was going to make that argument. But then we were talking about doing Rick Lantis, and then I started rewatching that, and you and I were talking about it, and it's the greatest thing ever. Like, it is, the genius in the season 3 episode 7, I think it is, Rick and Morty, Rick Lantis mix up, the genius per minute is just, it's unbeatable. Like, it's out of this world. I can't even fathom it.
It's staggering.
And so then it's like, well, now we just have to talk about that. So
yeah,
and then here's where I pulled out this weapon that I had at my disposal, listeners. I was like, well, I guess we'll have to do two parts. Or if Dune demanded three parts, then how many parts does Rick Lantis, one of the best creations of all time, how many parts does it deserve? Aaron, you tell me.
Yep. You know, you're not wrong. It is worthy of so much analysis. And I feel really bad for the vocal minority of our listeners who are not Rick and Morty fans that, you know, this may not be your favorite three episodes or whatever. But
so people who are just wrong, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I want to tell them they should watch just this episode at least because they could still enjoy it in itself. But part of the point of what we're going to discuss is that this episode is so brilliant because of what it builds on. So that might might not be true.
So we're going to talk aesthetics. We're going to talk that essay. We're going to talk, you know, there's philosophy of art involved. There's all kinds of stuff. But first, we need to do like the ultimate exposition zone and just talk about why this episode is so good. Because another component of this is people who are wrong on the internet. You know, I came across a forum of people who are like, why do people like this Rick and Morty episode? And it actually, I don't bring it up just to, you know, kind of crap on people who I think are missing the point. It's also part of the philosophy involved in the T.S. Eliot essay is tradition and like cultural knowledge and how it adds up over time. And you see people online who clearly are watching the show without the analysis or cultural kind of body of knowledge that I guess maybe you need to appreciate it properly. And it all does tie together in one nifty Marvel universe. So
only way better, right?
All right. So let's enter the ultimate exposition zone here.
You're traveling through another dimension beyond that which is known to podcasters. It is the middle ground between fair use and copyright infringement, between ordinary fanboying and meaningful analysis. It is the exposition zone.
Yeah, so 4-hour exposition zone.
You got to go all the way back to episode 1 of season 3 to get this started, right? Like, have we ever introduced the Citadel itself?
I forget. We probably talked about it. Well, anyway, the point, we've talked about Rick and Morty, but in case people are new listeners or something, if you don't know Rick and Morty, one of the components of it is about the multiverse. And, oh, yeah, we talked about the multiverse and we talked about, what is it, David Lewis? Is that his name?
Yeah, we talked about David Lewis's multiverse. And I think we did talk about the Citadel some on that episode. So maybe go back and check that one out for sure.
But the Citadel is this place where, even though there are apparently infinite Ricks and Mortys, which is difficult to conceive of as part of the multiverse, some number of Ricks and Mortys are living in the together from different, even though they're from different realities, they're living together on a Citadel. And that's where this one takes place. And there's a funny kind of misdirect because the Rick and Morty that we know mainly, allegedly, from the show kind of go off and do their own adventure in Rickland, Atlantis, and they just like leave and we don't follow them for this episode. And then at the end they come back and they're like, man, that was a great adventure. But we go to the Citadel, and this episode, I think it's three storylines, I guess. Three, right? Yeah.
The election, the kids, and the cops. Yeah, so three main.
The election, the kid, the cop, and the, would you call the factory part of the election?
Oh, yeah, so four, really.
So four? Yeah. Three and a half or four. And each one of them is not a, what would the correct word be? Not a parody, but kind of a send-up of
homage.
An homage. Okay, yeah. That's a better word. They each utilize a specific work of art, I think, pretty well. And that's the interesting thing about this show. Because at first, my first reaction to it was, well, I'm blown away by how genius this was. And then part of me was like, well, but now that I think about it, is it just the fact that they squeezed in 3 to 4 familiar storylines in a way that, you know, is kind of borderline ripping it off, you know, and utilize that. And then I've watched it, you know, 70 more times. I'm like, no, it's actually also just brilliant. Yeah. You know, like it's amazing how well it utilizes other works of art, but fashions it into a cohesive thing,
right?
That is a critique of power and injustice and politics and all these things. It's just incredible.
It's I would say it's a synthesis rather than just a replication, right? A duplication, I think, is Eliot puts it.
Yeah, I like that. So you've got I guess if we try to go through the storylines a little bit, you've got the Stand By Me, which unfortunately I haven't seen that movie, but I'm told it's not like I'm missing all that much.
One of the weaker Stephen Kings, in my opinion.
And it's sort of a group of kids, but the kids are all Mortys. They're different Mortys. And they have their storyline. And then you've got it's kind of, I'm pretty sure it's a Training Day homage.
Yeah, slash maybe a little bit of Chinatown.
Time. Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen Training Day, but I believe that it's mainly that. And that one I think is particularly brilliant because instead of, you know, I guess the analog to kind of the structural racism situation in America is this structural, I don't know if you call it racism, but this pervasive problem of kind of anti-Morty bigotry, or like, I guess just the elitism of the fact that Rick has, you know, Rick in the show is the smarter being, I guess, and Morty is the kind of stupid sidekick. And there's even to the point where his Morty's stupidity is so great that the reason he's with Rick is because it masks his genius. Like scanners right. can't find the super genius Rick because Morty is so dumb that he like offsets it. So that's this society we're looking at. It's a society of Ricks and Mortys where they kind of fill their roles and the parallels to race are really interesting and at times funny, but also like really hard hitting truth wise, right. Because Rick is they have in this storyline, they have the Rick cop get paired up, who's like a new recruit, get paired up with a Morty cop who's the grizzled veteran. And I think that's the Training Day part of it. And I love this particular storyline because it says so much about how racism functions in our society. And like, you got this Rick who's coming from no experience in the real world, really, in policing, and expecting that the Morty cop is going to be like overly friendly toward Mortys, you know, and like sensitive and all that stuff. And it's the exact opposite. Like, in order to survive in the reality he's in, this Morty cop is like particularly ruthless with other Mortys and super jaded and like all this stuff. And it, in a way that I think is very much borne out in the real world oftentimes.
Yeah. And they do such a wonderful job of playing on Morty's language tics in a way that like,
oh God,
they
love
create
it.
A
oh
kind
God.
Of Morty
he code
slang.
Switches. He code switches. It's incredible.
It is the
it's
code
so
switch.
Good.
You're right. It's totally code
yeah,
switching.
Yeah, he talks one way when he's speaking with his new, you know, Rick partner. And then when he talks to these Mortys on the street, he code switches and goes into Morty talk. It's so brilliant. God, yep. There's so many components of this that are just, any one of them is good, but there are like 75 different components to this episode that are just brilliant. It's unbelievable to me.
Yeah, you could watch a full season of any of the subplots and you'd be totally satisfied. You know.
Yeah, like, I'm like going to go back through our chat where I was just typing lines to you so I wouldn't forget them, cuz as they were happening.
Oh geez, what would I know about rules? Get in the car.
Yeah, no, he's yeah, he says, "Oh geez, what would I know about knowing stuff? I'm just a Morty." Yeah, oh, it's so good cuz he's like and then it's so good. Sorry, just as an example, because the Morty assumes the like street Mortys that they're, you know, policing or whatever, assume that the Rick, the policeman Rick, is Morty's kind of keeper, you know, because each Morty has a Rick as their kind of guardian. And he says, yeah, go listen to what your Rick said. And the Morty in like this angry voice is like, he's not my Rick. He's my partner. Ah, geez. Because ah, geez is the thing, is the code switching language. Like, it's so brilliant.
Well, and like the levels, because I think those two Mortys that he, like, this is getting a little in the weeds, but like, there's so much good stuff here, right? Because he comes up to them and he starts in the very kid Morty voice. And their response about your side, you know, being the sidekick is clearly meant to like deliberately antagonize him. So they're like, it's a whole language of references that
oh,
is
it's so good.
So beautifully constructed.
I realized as I was trying to explain that, I was like, that's going to be hard to do because there's every single thing requires requires a lot of explanation, mm-hmm. which will ultimately tie back to the philosophy we are going to eventually discuss.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, this storyline is incredible. And then you got the other one that is the Simple Rick factory. Oh, it's so good.
It's hard to decide which is the best storyline. Like,
yeah, how about you explain the Simple Ricks for us? I've been talking a lot.
Oh my god, the Rick storyline is amazing because you have this factory that creates these Simple Rick wafers where they have a Rick who has a memory of being like a normal Rick who has a happy relationship with his daughter. And they have that Rick hooked up to a machine where they're feeding him memories of that experience and taking the chemical that his brain produces, like X-Men 2 style, and feeding it to people through these wafers. And it's
almost like the opiate of the masses is what I thought.
Yeah, it's like Soma. It's basically Soma.
Yeah,
right?
True.
Oh god, yeah, it's Brave New World. It's totally that. And so it's and we have this Rick character working in the Simple Rick factory who is angry that despite being a Rick, he's stuck in this dead-end job. And so eventually he does like a go postal kind of thing and murders his boss and tries to barter his way out of the situation. And like you get some of the best lines ever, in my opinion, in the culmination of the sequence of that plot line. It's
yeah. I this is one of the lines I sent you, which is just a throwaway line. It's you would miss it so easily. Like the police surround him and they're like, you know, come out, whatever. And he kind of threatens the police, and you know, the police are Ricks, of course. And then the police officer says, "We're working stiff Ricks, just like you, but our assembly line is justice."
Yep, it's so good.
And it's so brilliant. It's a quick thing, but it's a brilliant part of like, yeah, oftentimes when we're mad at the police as a system, you know, like as a power structure and all that, there's also the component, the added component in all of this that like given police officers, especially if you're coming at it from like maybe sort of an anti-capitalist kind of, you know, that kind of lens, I guess, that sort of critique, each Rick is like just a cog in a machine, or each police person is just a cog in a machine of the system, you know? So it's like, there's so many critiques of systemic injustice in there, you know, and like there's this quick little line. It's a 3-second line, and I love it so much.
And there's no wasted space because there's payoff for all of this, right? Because
yeah,
I'm like, I should say spoilers, but like I literally believe you can't spoil this particular piece of art. Like
it's too
good. Will still be good no matter what. But like the end of this story is just as this Rick is about to be killed by the cops, he's saved by the owner of the factory, who pretends that he's going to release him. And right at the end, as he's about to escape, he shoots him in the back of the head, puts him in the place of Simple Rick, and the new commercial
is... Yeah, and it turns into the new commercial. Yeah, it's... Oh,
and the new commercial is one of the most nihilistically beautiful lines of all time. It says, "Come home to the unique flavor of shattering the grand illusion."
Grand illusion. Come home to Simple Rick. Yeah, oh, they put him in the machine... you know, harvesting the feeling that he was about to escape to a better life.
Yep.
And that is another component I wanted to talk about, because in this episode, there's two examples, and maybe there's more, but off the top of my head, two examples of, this is why it's so brilliant to me, because it's not simple. Like there's so many levels of analysis here.
Mm-hmm.
And one level is we're presented with problems as they say, a 30,000 feet view. We're presented with problems and conflicts, and at a simplistic piece of art would be like, here's your solutions. Here it is. You know, like here's the solutions for you. End of story, conflict. But what Rick and Morty does instead in both these instances, one being the Willy Wonka-esque
mm-hmm.
Owner of Simple Ricks, and the other being, I think, the evil Morty,
mm-hmm.
Who takes control, is they have characters who speak in the language of the problems and solutions and say like, yeah, I hear you. Here's all these concerns that I, you know, and it's very much a critique of populism and maybe... Mm-hmm. Maybe Trump, and maybe even, I hate to say it, but it might be, when we get to the evil Morty character storyline, it might be a critique of Obama, a pretty vicious one, I think
neoliberalism, certainly, I would say. Yeah.
I don't know if you can escape, though, the fact that he's a Morty.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, I think that's too, it would be incredible if that's not intentional, you know. But anyway, back
that's
to what I'm saying.
Thought.
You get these characters who speak the language of the problems and offer solutions, but then ultimately are just capitalizing themselves, you know. And it's something you see in life.
Yep.
All the time, where like, and it depends on how many layers of paranoia you have or whatever, but you see people who speak the right language and say like, I hear you, you know, I feel your pain. Here's what we need to do. I'm one of you. I'm just another Rick and Morty, you know. And then you come to find out they're just benefiting from the system in that way. Like they're utilizing what they need. Sort of, I think the Willy Wonka Rick character, it's a corporate thing. It's like when, you know, it's like when Nike starts selling you on the Kaepernick protests.
Right.
It's like that kind. It's such a brilliant, to me, brilliant send up of that kind of thing, uh-huh. where they recognize like, okay, here's the message we need to continue exploiting people and sell, you know, we're one of you. And then they're still making bazillions of dollars and exploiting children and whatever it is. But they utilize that message. And all, you know, all there are is these victims at the bottom who can't, you know, they try to trust somebody, but they can't because ultimately they're going to be sold out. Like it's incredible to me.
Yeah. I just had my mind blown because as you were describing sort of, we need to talk about the fourth story too, but before I lose this moment, I want to say something. Cause it like all of what we're talking about with this episode is about the layers of references and analysis. And I don't know if this is what it's based on, but I just like finished watching through The Wire and I just realized,
oh yeah,
the plots of this episode are the seasons of The Wire. For folks Whoa. Who haven't watched it, every season of The Wire centers on different parts of Baltimore. You've got a season about the cops, Ooh. A season about the dock workers, the everyday laborers. You've got a season true. About the schools, and you've got a season about politics.
Wow, I think you're right.
It's holy crap. Horrifying how much that
lines
up.
Well, wait, isn't one of the seasons more about the press?
Yeah, there's one more season about the press as well.
Or is that just the politics one?
The politics, there's a season about politics and a season about that brings in the press. That's a new element from that particular season.
I've watched it all the way through twice, but it's been a while.
Right, and we get the press in this episode too, right? They're reoccurring characters.
That's true.
It's terrifying.
And there are so many great examples of dialogue from how, you know, evil. So let's talk evil Morty. Why don't you take that one?
Yeah. So the last plot line, the big background plot arc that's happening that all these little stories are set against is an election for the leadership of the Citadel and whatever crazy system these people have.
Yeah.
Right?
Presidential election, essentially.
Right. You know, the autonomous collective. They come and, right. So they've got a bunch of Ricks running and then one Morty is running and everyone like makes fun of this and thinks it's hilarious and absurd, but like he's gaining populist support. And like, then there's this great arc where his campaign advisor gets fired and then finds out something about him and like tries to have him killed, and it paradoxically gets him elected, and then you find out that he's really a bad Morty. And so
he's the evil Morty from a previous season that we won't go into.
Oh, got it. Yeah. And it's like right, that's another part of the references, like it's a character who they've sat on for two seasons before they come back to this character. It's amazing. And so like you said, it's about, you know, you get these big grand movements, not just in the story arc, but in like the themes of the whole big, the whole season, the whole series. It's so epic. So much payoff. And yet so many things you want more of. That's the great thing about it, is that it's all payoff and you desperately want more.
And it also disappoints. I mean, if you happen to watch this from the, like without the knowledge, you know, say it's the first time watching through and you don't predict the whole evil Morty thing or something, there is a sense of real disappointment that like this incredible politician Morty, who's saying all these true things, like saying these true things about the condition of the Citadel, good message, that kind of thing, in the end turns out to be just another, you know, or maybe an exceptionally corrupt politician who just wants to seize power using that language. You know, it's like it's almost to me like in certain countries where one dictator, there's a dictator and then there's somebody else who rises up to challenge them and gains enough popular support to do a coup and all that. And it really just becomes another dictator. Like, it's just, they use the language of populism to get rid of the previous dictator and then just do the same thing, kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm very curious to see where they develop this further, because they do leave you on this great cliffhanger about what's going to happen next. But
I almost think I almost wish they wouldn't, you know, like the idea.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those, like, I'm glad they never made another Matrix movie and there's just the one. It's like that. I'm very worried that there will be we can't live up to this.
We've got a pin in that. We'll pull a pin on that one later.
Here's another thing, just a quick note about the show itself, because the same guy does Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
This episode is 98% one guy doing every voice. I think the voiceover for the Simple Ricks commercial is the only thing that he doesn't do.
Which is Sam Elliott, I assume, right? Or
I couldn't tell if it was him or just somebody.
I think it's
doing
someone doing a Sam Elliott impression.
Yeah, that's what's meant to be. Yeah. It's so great. Like, the one guy is doing all these characters. It's incredible.
It's true. It's equivalent in my mind to like the Janet episode of The Good Place, where she just does all of them. And yeah, it's an amazing tour de force episode. And you were totally right that we needed a whole episode just to unpack that part of it before we get to the philosophy.
I don't even know that we did it justice.
We barely touched on how the Morty's killing Morty's parts of the cop sequence, like so many creepy layers to it, so many inversions of the previous tropes of like Morty's the one that's really concerned and Rick is the one that's like, don't think about it too much.
But it all works because we know, you know, we have a multiverse, and it does bring in some of those questions. Like, what is it when you have infinite of something? Does it still make sense? I guess statistically, Rick's will always be or will statistically be smarter than Morty's. But you have a couple exceptions. You know, there's the extremely dumb Rick that's like
Paul Morty
in the Morty class. And they call him tall Morty. And then there's, you know, evil Morty, who seems to be maybe smarter than everybody, possibly. And I think it plays within those assumptions to give you like various kinds of Rick and Morty relationships. You know, you've got the like drugged out Rick that's like, sort of I don't know, the relationship with Rick and those drug dealers, you know, is kind of interesting. The drug dealer Morty's, you've got that. And it just, to me, it all works so well. Like it smacks of reality so much. Like, it just takes little bits and pieces from real life and puts it into what is really, of course, an absurd show. Like, it's an absurd show,
right.
Absurd premise.
Right.
And it all works perfectly to me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like, we can talk about how, you know, the fact that, you know, these individuals, like, we've seen before that there are smarter and dumber versions of Rick, right? Because we saw a Simple Rick kind of character in a previous episode. So, like, the people who just think that, like, all Ricks are exactly the same clearly haven't been watching the show. But, like, for the people who are like, why are these Ricks all still working in this factory? Why don't they quit?
Yeah.
Right. Like, I think you can give interesting sort of artistic critique.
Yeah. So I stumbled across a forum, as I was mentioning, because I was just kind of Googling stuff about this episode, and we'll talk about it probably more later. But there are people who profoundly, in my opinion, miss the point and don't have any idea what they're watching. And they're obsessing over minor details of the Rick and Morty like setup, you know, and completely missing the wider societal commentary and all that. And one of the things they talk about, which isn't even right, by the way, is like, they're so mad that there's, even though they know Rick is like this exceptional super genius, but why are there Ricks working in a factory? That doesn't make any sense. They would all be too smart for that.
Yep.
And actually, someone did a comment that I think says it perfectly. Because they quoted the line in this forum. And they said, Ricks are the smartest guys in the universe. Why are they working in dead-end factory jobs and going on adventures? And they said, humans are the smartest animals on Earth. Why are they working dead-end factory jobs and not going on adventures? Yeah. And it's like, yeah, that's the critique. Like, you're not seeing it. It's
exactly.
It's sort of, it's all, we can bring in moral luck into it a little bit, but it's this idea that, like, no matter how equal everybody might be, systems can be unjust. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, it doesn't matter that the Ricks are super smart. You know, it's like power structures keep people down, possibly, like, or at least that's what it would seem to be saying here.
Exactly. Right. So I totally agree with everything you are saying there, right? Like, we can give a real like an in-world explanation for why in a situation like this, right, inequality would still emerge, and that can be its own whole sort of philosophical background to why things might actually end up that way. But it's also, in another sense, sort of profoundly missing the point that, like, if
there's a
finish
that, but I just had a brain explosion because there's another level that I want to talk about. But finish your thoughts. Sorry.
No, I was just gonna say that, like, the other point you're making is that when the art uses the concept in a way that pays off properly, this is something we've come back to again and again, you don't need to wonder about those questions. You can answer them if you want to, but, like, right, those are it's missing the point in the sense that it's like asking, you know, why are people driving crazy cars through Mad Max? Like, you're just not getting how we structure a world for the sake of a conceptual and experiential reason, and if it's built properly, you don't need to ask silly questions. But you can, and we can talk about, like, the social implications. So yeah, we want to totally agree. Brain explosion. Go ahead.
Yeah, galaxy brain explosion. The thing they're using as evidence in this is when the evil Morty tells, like, a plumber Rick, mm-hmm. "Hey, you have the same IQ as all these other Ricks. Why plumbing? That a plumber? That doesn't sound like a Rick job."
Yeah,
and he's lying, you know, like that's not he.
Right. He's trying to
get
votes.
He's a politician. He's exactly. What does he think? There won't be plumbers in this society. Like, no one will be a plumber.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and it's the kind of thing. It's an unspoken thing, but it comes back to, I think, moral luck a little bit. It's both a message that has some level of truth and that I think we all accept in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't often want to challenge it, but it's a lie. This idea that, like, oh no, everyone is perfectly equal. We'll all have the same job in academia making a million. You know, like, mm-hmm. no, like, there's different roles in society. Everybody has their differences between people. And it's this interesting political message that I think works, though, because nobody wants to challenge it. Nobody wants to talk about moral luck and the fact that, like, no, you won't be born with every opportunity. You know, you might not. Somebody might not be born with a good household, certain gifts of certain kinds. Like, we're not all equal. Like, we're never going to all be equal in that way.
Yeah.
But it works as a political message to say, like, oh, no, the politicians are failing you if you are a plumber. You know?
Right.
And it's perfect, consistent with that evil Morty character.
And this is something that I think they've actually done a great job setting up in the Rick and Morty multiverse. Like, one of the best examples, I think, from this episode is the media guys, right? Who are three versions.
I was going to bring that in too.
Right.
Yeah.
Of the same Rick, with, like, the C version being slightly worse than the B and the A version. And so it's like, in a sense, you know, how close are you to the, like, platonic ideal of the Rick, basically? And there are some theories.
I think that is intentional, mm-hmm. because what happens is I think it's the C-137, C-137B, and C-137C.
Mm-hmm.
And at first you start with just C-137, and then you see C-137B, and he's like, oh, it must be nice to, that's his line.
Right.
Must be nice to be C-137. And then later on in the episode, they get C-137C, who's, like, you know, more and more disfigured kind of thing. And the other two, the C-137 and C-137B, are like, can't stand that guy. I know, right? Like, and I think the message works on that level, too. It's like, mm-hmm. as long as you have somebody below you to hate, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. then like you can unite even though there's still a different, you know, like there's still a difference between the A and B, but they can both unite and feel lucky that they're not C-137C. And that, I think that's all part of the message of this,
episode. Mean, think about that great monologue in the debate, right? Where Morty, evil Morty says, right, the two groups that I see are the ones that benefit from seeing the Citadel divided and seeing it united. And you're right that like, right. he's using it in the wrong, for the wrong ends maybe, but like, he's not wrong that the system benefits from exactly like you're saying that like striation of feeling better than someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'll always be able to, I think it very much says a lot about populism. As I said, you'll always be able to utilize the, however, whatever percentage of people who are down on their luck or not, in quotes, you know, like the, that either the system's not working for, or they've made mistakes, whatever combination of factors, they are not unhappy, and you can whip them up into a common cause mm-hmm. and then continue to not really help them. Like that's kind of like this cycle of politics that I think it's critiquing.
Yeah, in a sense, it a little bit goes back to Dune.
No, you, it doesn't.
The cycle of politics, right?
Democrat. No, it doesn't. I knew after I said that, I was like, oh, crap. I've opened the door for you to talk about Dune.
Bringing it all back.
Wildly inferior to this episode. Sorry.
This thing wouldn't exist without Dune. We had fun.
You might be right.
That's a little joke ahead for next episode.
Those were three good episodes about Dune, but I just have to say I like this episode better of Rick Lantis. All right, we've done a Mondo exposition here. Hope you'll pardon our sheer love and admiration for this incredible work of art. Like, I seriously, and you know, I just want to add in. I saw another article. Just to give you an idea, like this, it's not like it's just Aaron and I fanboying because we're nerds who like the stupid show.
Mm-hmm.
Like Kumail Nanjiani, there's a tweet where he said, just watched last night's Rick and Morty with my mouth open. Nothing will ever be the same. This is not hyperbole.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. And like Seth Abramson, tonight's episode of Rick and Morty was just about the best 30 minutes of TV I've seen in my life. And I'm 40. Like, mm-hmm. watch the show. It matters. It's such an incredible critique of so many things, police violence, systemic injustice. It's incredible.
Yeah, if I was going to enter something into the competition of objectively good art, like this would be one of my submissions. It really, it's pound for pound some of the best. I mean, like I've watched a lot of things in my life, and
yeah,
this one,
I agree,
is mind blowing for me. And like I've watched this one 10,000 times, and it never gets stale. It never stops being funny. You never
I've
stop
watched
noticing.
It probably 20 times.
So good.
It's 22 minutes.
I know.
It's not even 30 minutes. 30 minutes with commercials. It's 22 minutes, and as you said, I think you put it best. Not a wasted ounce.
Mm-mm.
It's so brilliant.
So lean.
Oh, so good. All right. We'll have to move on to philosophy. No, just kidding. I'm very excited, actually, to talk about some interesting philosophy, as I said, involved with this, or rather stemming from this essay by T.S. Eliot and also branching off into some other aesthetics topics. It's going to be a lot of fun. Pardon us the 35-minute love fest for this episode, but it really is that good, in my opinion. So
it's worth it.
Well, we'd better do what we normally do. You know what's coming up. We'll give you the preview. That would be some aesthetics and actual philosophy relating to this coming up. But also, we've got to thank our top, top, top patrons who make Aaron say interesting, funny things. So what do you got?
Yeah, special thanks to Clone Bone, Too Busy with New Puppy to Be Clever, and If Picard Isn't the Best Captain, Then Why Is He the One Coming Back? That's a sick gauntlet to throw down there. All right.
All right. Well, that's our episode. We are going to go for a little after dark, as we always do. Patreon.com/0G if you'd like to enjoy that and all the goodies. You get the after dark. You get the monthly movie segments. I am, and I shouldn't say segments. That doesn't do it justice. The monthly movie episodes where we do a full length, probably double the normal length of an episode talking about a movie. And I'm excited to see what the patrons put us through next. But you're getting all those goodies, and you're getting our After Dark discussion right now.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, jeez.
That's all for the main show, but if you'd like to go to patreon.com/zeroG, you can enjoy Philosophers in Space After Dark. Here's a little sneak peek for you.
Evil Morty is willing to do to go the distance in a way that, like, moderate Obama was never willing to do. So that's the part where I would feel like the critique separates a little bit.
This has been a first transmission of Philosophers in Space. All music written and performed by Thomas Smith. If you've enjoyed your infotainment upload, please locate the nearest podcast interface device and fill it with 5-star ratings and glowing reviews. If you think Ground Control should spring for fun new goodies and content, consider supporting us at patreon.com/zeroG. You can find us on Twitter at zeroG Philosophy, where Aaron will instantly and compulsively respond. Or you can email us at philosophersinspace@gmail.com. Finally, if you're sad that it takes so long for our signals to reach Earth, you can always find Thomas over at Serious Inquiries Only and Opening Arguments, and Aaron over at Embrace the Void. Until next time, live long and philosopher.